Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:46 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is July 19th. And I thought we'd kick off with the yield curve spread. We're down to almost a negative 21 basis point level. So any kind of contention that we didn't have an inverted yield curve back in late March is really irrelevant at this stage, because there's no doubt that this is sharply inverted, and it has been over a decade since we've had such a large inversion. So this is certainly suggesting that there's going to be a recession. Now, quite how big a recession it's going to be is certainly debatable. Now, one of the things that I think people will be looking at is not simply that there is a sharply inverted difference between the 10-year and the 2-year, or that the difference between the 10-year and the 3-month has contracted by almost 100 basis points in less than a month, but rather that there are other lead indicators for recessions that haven't given a clear signal yet. So, for example, when we think about the PMI, the PMI is often regarded as a necessary condition for a recession. In other words, there are times when the PMI goes below 50 and you don't have a recession, but there's never been a recession without the PMI going below 50. And it makes sense because we're talking about a manufacturing index. And if the economy is contracting, there's less demand for stuff. And of course, manufacturers make stuff. So that's going to impede their businesses, and you'd anticipate that they fall. Also, manufacturing tends to be a more volatile industry. So then you get bigger peak to trough swings during expansions and contractions, and it would be deemed sensitive to the economic environment. Well, we're going to have a GDP figure in the not too distant future. So we had negative growth in the first quarter, and we've had a lot of variability in performance in the second quarter. So it's not unreasonable to anticipate that we're already in a recession. And of course, this index isn't going to update until August 1st. So we'll have a GDP figure before we have the PMI figure. That might suggest that we're not quite yet at a recession. But we can anticipate that growth is slowing down and the availability of credit is being impeded because of the inverted yield curve. Now let's just think about some of the companies that are most deeply exposed to this question. So if we think about regional banks, well, they're actually going up. So this is something that would question just exactly what's going on. We have an inverted yield curve, and yet the regional banks index has rebounded exceptionally impressively now from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, it has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So therefore, the question is this a short covering rally and unwinding the short-term oversold condition, and will it then roll over and break lower? Or is this a significant bottom from the region of a really significant secular trend level? And this is the question that everybody's asking. And I'm rather glad that I sold out the most expensive portion of my NASDAQ short, because the price is above now where I initiated it. But the bigger, broader question is, how can we have a big sustained advance in the wider market when liquidity conditions are being constrained and inflationary pressures are still problematic? Now, this, and we can then look back at the other counter trend rallies that we've had within the downtrend since the peak in November. And they've been quite abrupt, and they've been quite impressive in terms of their size and magnitude, and particularly the one that happened ahead of that little peak in March. So it looks increasingly likely that we're going to see at least something like that. We were seeing weakness yesterday, but it was countermanded in here today. The Dow Jones is up about 1,000 points in just the last week. So this is now pushing back up to test the high from the little downside key reversal that we had at the end of June. And we do need to look at weekly charts to see that there is a sequence of ranges, one below the last, and we're pretty much in the region of the lower side of that most recent range, or overhead range, right now. So there is certainly the possibility that we get a full reversion back to the 200-day moving average. The defining characteristic of lows being found in the region of the 1,000-day moving average during this big bull market on Wall Street, which blew the lights out in terms of outperformance relative to every other market in the world, is that every time it came back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average, it was associated with this splurge of new money. And there's no sign of that new money coming into the market right now. So when we think about the 10-year yield, it's back above 3%. And it's so far held onto these levels quite admirably. And we're in the region of the upper side of the long-term range. So there have been three occasions now where the yield tested the 3% level over the last decade and failed. And arguably, it has not quite yet broken out on this occasion. So the big question then is, can the stock market really hold on to its gains if bond yields start to march higher? So one of the reasons why bond yields have been marching higher is because of the weakness of the dollar. One of the primary reasons why investors were willing to buy treasuries is because of the strength of the dollar. They were being compensated by the yield that they were capturing, and the relative strength of the dollar compared to everything else was supporting demand for treasuries. Now the dollar is unwinding its short-term overbought condition. That's lending support to the stock market because the stock market is going up in nominal terms. But it's also lending support to European stock markets because the euro has been so weak. Well, it was certainly a factor in supporting the market in nominal terms, but with the euro strengthening now, then the potential for value to start to come in and for people to think more opportunistically about Europe, they're certainly supported in terms of foreign flows in by the turn in the currency. So the Euro Stoxx Index is rebounding from the region of the low from back in March, and clearly has potential now to unwind some of this oversold condition. So let's go back then and think about this dollar. So it did pop on the upside, and it is oversold, excuse me, overbought. So then the question is, where might it come back to find support? Could it possibly be around 105, or could it come back down into perhaps the 104 level, or maybe even 102, or will it come all the way back down to test the 100 level? Well, if the dollar comes all the way back down to test 100, then it's quite likely we're going to get a big short covering rally on stocks, but then bond yields will sell off. So our bonds will sell off, yields will rise because there will be less demand for dollar-denominated assets. There'll be fewer dollars willing to buy into the treasury market. Then yields will rise, the cost of capital will rise, the Federal Reserve will be even under more pressure to raise interest rates. So I'm not thinking that there's going to be a a sufficiently large rally to break down trends, but certainly there's scope for unwinding of short-term oversold conditions. Now let's think about the other major constraint on liquidity, which is the oil market. So Brent crude was up in a dynamic manner yesterday and improved upon that performance in here today. So this is a clear bounce from the $100 level. Now there's still a lot of uncertainty about supply, about economic growth and demand for oil, but the reality is that the war in Ukraine isn't going to end anytime soon. And more to the point, one of the reasons for the weakness in oil prices was because Joe Biden was heading off to Saudi Arabia with cap in hand, asking for OPEC to increase supply, and he basically came away with nothing. So oil prices are starting to move back up again. Now, European natural gas prices were a little bit softer in here today, and US natural gas prices were down to test the $7 level and then recouped some of the loss. But the reason is that there is at least some enthusiasm that Gazprom is prepared to restart the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Now, there haven't been any overt signs from the Kremlin that they're in fact going to do that. But at the same time, the people are watching Gazprom and seeing what they're doing, and obviously, if they're going to start up again on the 21st, then they would have to have workers start to warm things up. So there is some enthusiasm that Russia will restart, but it's still a big uncertainty, and I don't think anyone really thinks that they're going to go back to 100% of production. But this whole war with Ukraine has really ignited European interest in deteriorating standards of governance around the world. And Europe is now taking a more strident attitude towards China. And this is quite different from what's going on with the USA, because Europe is a much larger trading partner with China. They both import and export more into China. And you have senior European officials in Taiwan right now saying that they missed the boat on defending Hong Kong and they're not going to make that mistake with Taiwan. So that's extremely strident language from Europeans. And Nancy Pelosi is getting ready to visit Taiwan. So, Taiwanese politicians, against this background, are being really rather tight-lipped. And the TAIEX is right back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And of course, that is primarily because, and bouncing, and that's primarily because Taiwan Semiconductor is doing almost the identical thing. Then we can think about Apple. We had a downside key reversal yesterday. And it certainly helps if you type in the ticker correctly. And it has now at least improved upon that performance. So still steady in the region of the 200-day moving average and the lower side of that overhead trading range. So we are potentially looking at a further rebound. And in Apple's case, at least, that would start to question the consistency of the downtrend. Microsoft was looking rather weak yesterday, but it is now also starting to steady as well. But it does look like in a more consistent downtrend than Apple. I've got a lot of admiration for Google and the kinds of things they're investing in and the business model that they've been pursuing. But the challenge for anything related to social media is that legislation is gathering against them. And the difficulty that companies like Meta and YouTube are going to have in moderating their forums are quite profound. But at least that has been priced into Meta platforms. So it is bouncing now, but it's got an awful long way to go. So it's not unusual to see some substantial moves within base formations where we get large trough to peak swings and they still range more often than not. We can also then think about some of the other really deeply oversold companies, and Disney had stirred the ire of Florida voters and a substantial number of people that would historically have been its main customers, but it is now also beginning to steady. And when you've seen such a really enormous decline, well, valuations have come in quite a lot as well. So then there's certainly the potential for at least a reversionary rally. And we're not all that far away from the lows put in 2020. And Netflix is a very similar situation. One of the and it is firming now within the range. So there is the potential that we get some form of reversionary rally, but I think it would be very difficult to argue that Netflix is about to recoup its peak from 2021. I think it's much more likely that we're going to go into a lengthy period of ranging, and but that doesn't mean that the price can't rally 50% and then subsequently roll over afterwards. When we think then about Japan, well, obviously the state funeral for Abe is going to focus on his legacy. And his legacy, in terms of the stock market, has been a really quite impressive rebound. And the Nikkei is ranging between the 1,000 and the 200-day moving averages. And the yen, and I guess we can just simply look at what the stock market looks like in dollar terms to demonstrate what the devaluation of the yen means. Because not only did it mean a big pop on the upside in 2020, but it's given up most of that advance over the last year because the yen has been so weak. But the dollar is now unwinding its overbought condition relative to the euro, and the yen is still weakening against it. So Japan is certainly very eager to devalue their currency. The renminbi is also susceptible to additional weakness. There's the significant risk of capital flight. Now, China has very strict capital controls, and they've basically turned off crypto mining and transactions in the country to curtail capital flight. They're also stopping people from leaving the country. And you basically now have to have an immigrant visa for another country before you can get an exit visa from China, and even then, it's a doubtful prospect. So, there's certainly the threat of capital flight because of the onerous nature of the administration there, and I think people have really had enough of the lockdown mentality that is a constant risk, and particularly as we have more and more increasingly virulent versions of the coronavirus. What I think is also interesting is that uranium is beginning to steady. So we had a deep pullback from the peak late last year, and now we're starting to see some evidence of it steadying. The unanimity of support for renewable energy is beginning to fray. So when we think about the solar sector, well, China manufactures just about all the solar cells, then they're extremely difficult to recycle. Now, the ETF is bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But the big question then is, if relations with China are going to deteriorate further, will the rest of the world then be continually willing to, or indeed able to, buy solar panels? So this is obviously a significant question, and it could help to support the view that nuclear energy is the future, and that nuclear energy doesn't just provide reliability or less emissions, but it provides security. And security may indeed be the Trump ticket for just about every investment argument in the future. So there's a real possibility that we're moving into a much more difficult environment geopolitically. And then, of course, the question is, how will governments raise the funds necessary to improve infrastructure, to rebuild manufacturing capacity, and to rearm? And that is going to take a great deal of money. So that could easily be part of the rationale why stocks are rebounding now, that the threat of inflation is one thing, but the existential dread is another. And there's the possibility that we're coming towards a peak in inflation, in which case, then there will be a rebound in stock markets that goes beyond a reversionary rally. But as long as we have inverted yield curves and high oil prices, those are taxes on consumption. And it certainly suggests that we're going to move into a recession first, and then a period of lax monetary accommodation afterwards. And in this case, you can't put the cart before the horse. You have to have the recession first. So I think the odds-on bet are that we're going to have a reversionary rally, but perhaps not a lot more than that, and that the surprises on the economic side and on the earnings side are going to be on the downside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.